Beer stood back and wrapped her arms protectively around her chest. "I think you know what happened to your sister," Nea said. Abir bowed her head. "How would I know that?" "I hear you're getting married," he said, "to Nuf's fiancé. He's not her fiancé." There was more vehemence in the comment than he expected. Nair saw the anger in her face and decided to take a risk. "She had everything, didn't she? Everything you wanted. You were jealous that she was going to marry Kathi."
"She didn't love him."
She clutched herself and started to shake, her eyes welling with angry tears.
"I knew what she was doing, sneaking around and having sex with her escort."
"Did she tell you that?"
"How else did she get pregnant? It's disgusting what she did."
"She wasn't seeing Muhammad. She was sleeping with someone else." Nair was unwilling to give up Othman. "Let me go back a little bit," he said. "You wanted to get rid of her so that you could have Kathi to yourself, and the only way to do that was to make it look as if she ran away. The best place to take her was the desert. No one would ever find her out there. But in order to make it look like she went to the desert, you had to steal a camel. It wasn't actually too difficult getting the camel into the back of the truck."
"What did you do? Make her walk up a plank? The same plank you later used to roll Noof's motorcycle onto the truck?"
At the mention of the motorcycle, Abir's rigid countenance showed a mild crack of fear, but she kept her jaw firm. "It's a big feat for a girl your size. You got the camel in the truck. You put the plank in the truck. All you needed was Nuf, and you knew where to find her. You got to the zoo before she did and waited. You came at her from the bushes." He touched the spot on his temple that coincided with Noof's head wound.
"Your story is ridiculous," she said.
"It's your story too." He saw the heat on her cheeks and he plunged ahead. "Your next problem was getting to the desert, but you'd planned for that too. You'd stolen your brother's jacket with his desert maps and his GPS system, and you figured out how to use them. Once you were out there, you could dump her body where no one would find her." Abir maintained a stubborn silence. "Then you drove back towards the city, but you had to get rid of the truck. You obviously picked a clever enough location. It still hasn't been found. From there, you climbed onto the motorcycle and drove to the beach. Except you left behind some evidence. The motorcycle logo burned its brand into the camel's leg." Her face showed another quick tremor of fear. "So? I think it's obvious proof that the camel and the motorcycle were at close quarters," he said. "Somewhere extremely hot.
It's amazing that you managed to pull it off and confound everyone.
People are stupid," she spat.
He sat still, holding his anger in check.
"If people are stupid, then that includes you. There were a lot of details you had to work through, but you forgot one thing. Clothing. When you drove back to the hut, you had to get rid of your white robe, the one you wore to disguise yourself as a man. So you hung it on the hook."
The pride and defiance left Abir's face. "If Nuf ran away," he said, "wouldn't her black robe still be hanging on that hook?"
"I never considered that a woman could have done this."
Nair took a breath, trying to calm himself, but it didn't work.
"And this was all about Kathi. I guess that means you didn't know that she was planning to abandon him on their honeymoon."
Abir made no effort to hide her shock.
"Yes," he said. "She was making arrangements to live in New York."
"That's not true."
"It is."
There was no satisfaction in seeing her horror. It only angered him more.
"She didn't want to be with Kathi. She wanted someone else. And something else."
Abir bit her lip so hard he thought she would puncture it.
"She was only marrying Kathi for the money," she said,
but without conviction.
"She wouldn't have left him so easily."
"But I don't understand why that meant you had to kill her," he said. "I don't think there's any sense in it, when you could have stopped the marriage simply by telling Kathi about her behaviour."
Something in the jerky dance of muscles on her face indicated that this was the most disturbing question of all.
Nair sat forward with new interest. "Or was it that he wouldn't have believed you?" he whispered. "Maybe he loved Noof so much that he might not have even cared." She sat glowering at him with all the malice in her being, but he felt immune to it now. "Did you ever talk to Noof about this?" he asked. She let out a dry laugh. "You can't talk to Noof. She doesn't care about anything but herself." He found her use of the present tense strangely disturbing. "So you hated her?" "Yes." She spoke with a frankness that touched him. "In a way, I am more blind than ever," he said, squinting at a beer. "I see the truth now, but I still don't know what's right." Abir's neck was rigid, her whole body tense. "You won't turn me in," she said. "You know what they'll do to me." Abruptly, she stood up. "Besides, you have no evidence," she said. Lowering her burqa, she stumbled from the room. Something was crumbling inside him, the wall that held the strength of his beliefs, and it hurt to feel himself weakening. To feel this much sympathy for women like Noof, who felt trapped by their lives, by the prescriptions of modesty and domesticity that might have suited the prophet's wives, but that didn't suit the women of this world, infected as it was by desires to study and travel and work and have ever greater options and appetites. He tried not to feel that the world was collapsing, but it was collapsing, and there was nothing he could do. Just watch with a painful, bitter sense of loss. After 2 days of sailing alone, Nair had docked at the marina and switched on his cell phone to find that Katya had called him twice. At first, he was shocked that she had called at all, but his indignation had melted like summer ice. He was excited to hear from her. When he called her back, she sounded very pleased, which made him nervous and happy. They made arrangements to meet at the children's park. At 1 o'clock the next afternoon, Nair stood at the entrance to the park. A few families walked by on their way out. Katya finally arrived, stepping around the iron entrance gate. For a split second he panicked, thinking that Ahmad, her driver, hadn't come after all, but the trusty escort appeared. As Katya drew closer, he could tell that she was smiling behind her burqa. "Hello, Nair," she said. "It's nice to see you." "It's nice to see you too." Ahmad approached and shook his hand. The three of them headed for the Ferris wheel, but Katya stopped at an ice cream stand, and Nair stopped with her. Ice cream was a wonderful idea. 3 minutes later, Nair and Katya sat alone in the open carriage, side by side. One car behind them, Ahmad sat reading a newspaper. The attendant wandered away, giving Katya the privacy to raise her burqa. One of them had to say something, but nothing came to mind. Finally, Katya plucked up the courage to say, "So, have you seen Othman lately?" "I haven't seen him since that day we met in the parking lot." "Ah." A slight pause. "Are you two still friends?"
"Yes."
"I still consider him a friend."
"But you're not close?"
He noticed her ice cream tipping dangerously over the cone's edge.
"Why do you say that?" he asked.
She shrugged. A silence fell. He had already told her about his conversation with Abir, but on the phone she hadn't betrayed much of a reaction other than bafflement. He wondered how she felt about it now, but was too afraid to ask.
"By the way," she said, "the coroner has decided to reopen Noof's case."
He glanced at her.
"Really?"
"Yes. I showed my boss the work we'd done and all the samples from the body. She took them to her boss and he put in the request. The division chief just approved it."
"So what's going to happen now?"
"They're sending police to question the family."
She shrugged.
"The Shrawis are powerful. They might try to cover it up again.
but I've already spoken to Nusra about it. She had no idea what had happened, and she promised to cooperate with the investigators.
Nair was filled with admiration not only for Katya's courage in turning over their evidence, but for speaking to Nusra, who had already lost one daughter and now stood to lose another.
"You amaze me," he said. She suppressed a smile.
"My boss also took the liberty of calling Kathy to warn him that his fiancée was under investigation. I don't know what's going to happen to Abir if they do find her guilty. She'll probably spend some time in jail."
"It would be well earned, I think," he said.
"I also wanted to mention," Katya continued, "that the division could use an investigator like you. Have you ever considered working for the government?"
His eyes popped open.
"No." Was this why she had asked to see him? "Well, why not? You're good at detective work. You're better than some of the..."
"I don't like dead bodies," he said quickly.
"Oh, that's right. I forgot about that." She smiled.
"Listen, I can't stay too long." He was flustered.
"Why not?"
She seemed disappointed and he felt glad. "I've got an eye appointment," he said finally.
"Oh. Well, I'll come with you. Think of me as your escort, in case any women should throw themselves at you. They'll think I'm your wife."
He felt himself blushing idiotically. "Women don't throw themselves at me."
"Yes, they do. You just haven't been paying attention."
Dr. Jarhith led them down a carpeted hallway and into an examination room.
"Did you say that the desert was troubling your eyes?"
"Yes." Nair guided Katya to a chair near the door and then spent an awkward moment climbing into the patient's seat.
"I think it's the dust, aggravating my vision."
"Of course."
Jarhith dimmed the lights. "Let me tell you, it's always the dust."
Nair found the process relaxing. It was dark and still. The doctor could fix his vision. Thanks be to Allah, anything could be fixed in the proper hands.
Jarhith stood up and closed Nair's chart. "We'll get started on your glasses. It should only take an hour. While you're waiting, perhaps your sister would like an examination too. After all," Jarhith went on, "with veils on their faces all day, women only want to see the world, you know. And clearly, my friend, clearly."
Nair looked at Katya's burqa, rising gently with her breath. She wanted to say something. She was thinking about it.
"I think," Nair said, "that she already has perfect vision."
He imagined he saw her smile.